Welcome to the Host Report Podcast. Here are our hosts this week.
I'm Cheyenne Tuck.
I'm Gabe Matthews.
And I am Landon Heaton. And this week we'll be talking a little about everyone's favorite freeloaders, parasites. Have either of you guys ever had a parasite?
No, thank God.
I haven't, thankfully.
Okay. I might have. I'm not sure yet. We'll talk about it a little bit later. Anyways, first things first, we need to do a little research on what exactly we mean by parasite. According to the CDC, a parasite is a little creature that lives off some sort of host to get its nutrients. And this is, in a parasitic relationship, always at the host's expense. We all have one friend like that, don't we?
Oh, yeah.
Now, we aren't going to be talking about those type of parasitic relationships today, but we will be talking about our little freeloader friends that make us sick. We have ectoparasites, helminths, and protozoans. Ectoparasites aren't what we are going to talk about a lot today, but they include ticks, fleas, lice, and other blood-sucking guys that often cause disease. My brother-in-law actually recently got a tick, and luckily we were able to remove it pretty quickly once we found it. But today, I luckily get to talk about helminths, and you might be asking yourself, what in the hell is a helminth? These are typical worm parasites. Some of these organisms include roundworms, flatworms, flukes, and thorny-headed worms. Some of these you may have heard of, like hookworms, and others you may have heard of only because your pets or livestock got them. It's pretty common here in Wyoming. But the three types that infect people most often are roundworms, which include hookworms, tapeworms, and flukes. And all these guys kind of suck. They basically infect your gastrointestinal or GI tract and like to eat whatever you do, maybe a little extra too. They use a little part called the scolex to hook onto us, typically the intestinal wall, and feed off of us. I did a little research in the Mayo Clinic, and in small amounts, these parasitic infections, though they sound scary and gross, usually aren't that bad. They may cause us to have different cravings or eat a little extra, but other adverse effects are typically minimal. To experience real harmful side effects, a lot of worms would need to be growing in your intestines. A little bit about transmission of these guys. They are often spread through infected soil, unsanitary conditions, or through undercooked foods. Traveling to different parts of the world can lead us to have exposure to new and different organisms and parasites. Now, I was a little worried about these ones because as a kid, I used to run around barefoot and wasn't the most sanitary kid, and recently I lived in Mexico for a while. But after looking on WHO, on the WHO website, here in Wyoming, we don't have too much to worry about. We live in a pretty dry environment, which is not very conducive to growth of worms, fungi, or really anything at all. We don't get much around here. The thing is that most worms grow better in warm, moist environments. Tropical regions tend to have higher occurrences of infection due to that simple fact. Now, as much as I would love to go vacationing all the time, this is what really has me worried. I tend to explore a lot and feel like maybe if I were to get a little too adventurous, I would end up finding myself somewhere where I would hop into some unclean water or something and end up getting some hookworms in my feet from the dirty soil nearby. Though I'm not entirely convinced I haven't already had a parasite at some point. I lived in Mexico for a couple years and ate some food that was quite suspect. May have been a little undercooked at times. And while I never thought it was the biggest of problems, I may have endured quite a bit more sickness than I should have if I hadn't eaten those tacos. The Cleveland Clinic mentions that around 10,000 estimated cases of trichinosis occur each year worldwide. And this is caused by consuming raw, undercooked, or improperly stored meats. So that's why you should know how the sausage is made. A lot of these worms are good at finding a new host. Their typical life cycle involves being born either near the anus or the intestines, then riding it out into the feces, which then makes its way into some dirt somewhere, and then they grow in that dirt and wait for an opportune moment to either be ingested by some animal, or often hookworms, they get into our feet. They develop some attachment strategies, and then with their hook-like mouths, the scolex, they're able to attach to us or some other animal host, and then they can live somewhere for a while until that gets eaten. And then it continues to infect along the chain until typically it ends up in a human host. At least a lot of them do. This works well for them because they get to survive off the nutrients that a host provides for them. And after they just lay a bunch of eggs and hope to survive for a bit, nice and happy and healthy until the host hopefully finds some way to treat that infection. I think I might have blabbered enough for now, but what do you have for us, Cheyenne?
Okay, so today I'm going to be talking about some protozoan parasites, and y'all might be wondering, what the heck is a protozoan parasite? So, let's break it down. As we know, protozoans are eukaryotic organisms, and they have a pretty complex internal structure, but don't let this fool you. These protozoan parasites aren't too complex in the sense that they are emotionally draining, like your one freeloader friend. We could just say they're more physically draining. Someone usually will get a parasite by consuming the eggs of the parasite, but hopefully not on purpose, and you'll learn why that is in just a minute. This is usually from contaminated water or even contaminated produce. So, let's get into four of these common protozoan parasites. So, first we're going to start off with our good friend Giardia intestinalis. Giardia is an example of a flagellate. This means that the parasite has flagella, just like some bacteria we learned about in class. But it likes to use these to swim around our blood and our intestines, which is kind of nasty. According to mayoclinic.org, this parasite is known to cause diarrhea, gas, smelly greasy poop, stomach cramps, upset stomach, and dehydration.
That is not very nice.
A little gnarly. This totally sounds like something you guys want, right?
I've had it before.
As the name suggests, this lovely parasite lives within our intestines and is unfortunately pretty common. This parasite actually has a funny name known as beaver fever. And this is simply just because beavers are usually carriers of the parasite. So, moving on. The next gnarly protozoan we're going to talk about is Entamoeba histolytica. Kind of a mouthful there, but this one is a little bit less common, especially in the U.S., but truly only a little bit. It is the third leading cause of death from parasitic infection, according to the author of Entamoeba histolytica infection, author Chow. So this is pretty intense, and these little boogers are nasty. These are an amoeba parasite, which means that it's a teeny tiny microscopic organism that can cause an infection called amoebiasis. So let's look at where they live and some symptoms from these. The main way to get these baddies is through the fecal-oral route. So this can either come from something simple like not washing your hands after the bathroom or downing some questionable food and water. So the symptoms can be mild to severe, and they include diarrhea, abdominal pain, and fever. Dare I say, that one's pretty nasty. Okay, next up in this thrilling lineup is Cryptosporidium. I'm not sure about you guys, but boy, does this one sound interesting. But whatever you do, do not let the name fool you. It has literally nothing to do with cryptocurrency. It is more or less has everything to do with poop. So, it is under the class of apicomplexan, meaning it doesn't really have any complex structures within, like, flagella or cilia. Much like the two previous parasites, this one is also caused via the fecal-oral route. And according to CDC.gov, this also has similar side effects, including diarrhea, stomach cramps, vomiting, and fever. However, I think the scary part about this one is that there are some people who show no symptoms at all. So you could have these guys living in you and you didn't know.
Wow. Disgusting.
And who's might have it right now.
Fecal-oral route?
Yeah, ooh. Crazy. There's also no medications that can fight against this, so you kind of just have to thug it out. Okay, last one, but certainly not least, we have Plasmodium. This is more commonly known by its more frightening name, malaria. Oof. I'm not sure about you guys, but growing up, I was so scared of getting malaria. I don't know why, but I would see news reports in, like, 2013 of millions of people dying from it, and my little 7-year-old self was just scared of mosquitoes since then. According to mayoclinic.org, malaria is a disease caused by a parasite. The parasite is spread to human through the bites of infected mosquitoes. So, building off of this, Plasmodium are little parasites. They get into your blood, infect your red blood cells, and they love to live in your liver, and they can live in there for up to a year. Some side effects of this include fever, chills, diarrhea, abdominal pain, muscle pain, vomiting, and the list literally never ends. Kind of an insane little parasite here. However, good news to my 7-year-old self, malaria is treatable. So, silver lining. Okay, just really quick gonna say that when I signed up for this part of the podcast, I was truly unaware of how much poop I'd be talking about. But hey, that's unfortunately the reality of our parasites.
We appreciate it though.
These common parasites are so nasty, and after hearing about them, I don't think I'd ever want one. I don't know about you guys. Catch me always washing my hands for at least 30 seconds, maybe a minute. Speaking of washing hands, I'm going to hand it over to Gabe to talk about some ways that we can prevent getting parasites and also what we should look out for when it comes to these nasty suckers.
Yeah, thanks, Cheyenne. That was wonderful. Well, now that we know of all the friends that could be unknowingly residing in our bodies, let's talk about how we can get rid of them. and maybe just ghost them like that girl did to you senior year of high school. Now, with that being said, we'll be touching on different treatments that are used for each group of parasite, and then we'll go into the measures and cautions that we can take so that we just don't get them at all. That would be the best option, I think. But as mentioned before, we have ectoparasites, helminths, and protozoans, all of which have many unwanted symptoms and issues that could come from them. So let's just not get them and get rid of them, yeah? Ectoparasites are the first, and they're the creepy crawlies that Landon only briefly mentioned, just because our focus is on the smaller of the parasites, being for microbiology. However, as long as you maintain a clean lifestyle and conduct checks around the house and maybe your beanies and clothes every once in a while, you should remain free of these dudes. Quite common, though, however, check your dogs. Ticks are horrible. I hate ticks.
Ticks are awful.
Now, let's shift back into helminths. And I tell you what, after hearing Landon talk about them, I'm going to be doing every caution and treatment possible to not get them. And once you already have the worms crawling around in your intestines, I found on a website of Science Direct that the best treatments to give you another hope at life are broken down into anti-cystodal agents, anti-nematodal agents, and anti-rheumatodal agents. Now, those are some pretty intimidating names at first. However, anti, obviously, just means against. And rheumatodal, or the phrase after, is just the classification for the worm. And with that being said, though, they can kind of be interchangeable, the drugs they can use on pretty much any of the worms that were mentioned, but each of them have their own biological target that kill each worms a little bit better if you're specialized. Now, for those of us that don't already have these worms in our guts, making sure that we maintain proper hygiene and sanitization of facilities, as mentioned by Cleveland Clinic, is one of the best methods of prevention that everybody can take a couple minutes and do and be sure about to keep the squirmy dudes out of our gut. Along with this, making sure that we're drinking from clean water sources, kind of as was mentioned, that goes with anything, being healthy in general, I'd say. And just being aware of where our food and water is cleansed and processed is also pretty important. Do your research. And this is thankfully something that we don't have to worry about due to the privilege we have of living in the U.S. Parasites aren't typically talked about just due to the cleanliness that we have. It's truly a blessing, but this is not true for the rest of the world. And many parasitic illnesses are quite common just because of the lack of cleanliness and some of the processing of water that just doesn't take place. So with that being said, the next thing is nothing raw. Insert Gordon Ramsay yelling at somebody. But this is like the number one cause of helminth parasitic infection in the U.S., just from undercooked meats and that are contaminated and just not being proactive, I guess you could say. Just cook your food. Pretty simple. But now, last but not least, we have the protozoans that Cheyenne gave to us. Still kind of shaken up from the presentation. And despite all the horror of these friends, don't give up completely, even though that's what I would probably do if I had one. But there are treatments, depending on the kind of parasite, of course, as she had mentioned. Common medications include metronidazole, tinidazole, and nitazoxanide, which can target the variety. To break these down further, metronidazole are primarily effective against flagellates and the amoeba, and tinidazole are similar. However, they're used a lot less, and they have fewer side effects normally, just because of what they target in the parasite. Typically affects our cells less, so that's better. And lastly is the nitazoxanide, which is used primarily for children for treating cryptosporidiosis, I believe. I'm not sure. And Girardiasis? Yeah. Sounds right. And while these aren't the only treatments, they're the most common, with more being available, the more specified you may need, depending on the parasite and kind of where it's located in your body. And most of these treatments that I mentioned were pulled from NCBI, its website, which provides a lot of information on how to treat parasites. Almost any of them mentioned. So if research is your thing, maybe you even have a parasite, I encourage you to take a look yourself. The prevention of these freaks follows a trend with the other groups in the list as well, consisting of good hygiene, wash your hands, 20 seconds, we all know this, and handling your care with or your food with care, and protecting from bug bites, which actually hasn't been mentioned before, but bugs carry a lot of disease. They're gross. Just wear some bug spray. Be careful. And the last thing I'd like to mention is these are just nuts. Parasites are super overlooked, I feel like, just because we live in the U.S. and they're not as common. But, yeah, they're just not as mainstream. However, yeah, this isn't the case for other countries, and it's super important to know about how to stay safe and sanitize and all that good stuff. And again, we're very grateful that we live in the U.S. and don't have to deal with it as much. But yeah, there's the rant about parasites. So that's it for now, folks. Glad we have the opportunity to inform you all about parasites that call us their home. And as always, be safe out there. Remember, don't eat medium rare chicken.